Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty, another fancy special here with me. Oh, wait, it's me, your host, the number one fuckboy, the number one fuckboy. What's up, all my little number two fuckboys and fuckgirls out there in fucking podcast land? I'm joined today by one of the fanmen, one of the other fancies, Sean Clements. Sean, say hi, bud.
Hi.
thank you for coming in. I almost said thank you for having me to you, because that's how much I'm trying to please you in any given moment. Mm-hmm. That's how afraid of you I am. And joining us from Banshee itself, Chris Coy, you might know him as Calvin Bunker.
A.K.A. Buck Naked Fuckboy number 74.5.
Yes! Spoiler alert for the end of episode 5. You do get to see Chris Coy's ass. Spoiler alert for hosts of High and Mighty. You do get to see his ass in person. Pull your pants up, Chris.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks so much for coming in. We're so stoked you can make it.
Oh, man. I'm thrilled. Honored, man. Yeah. I'm a fan, man. I've been listening to you guys the last couple days, kind of in prep. Yeah. Hilarious.
Getting ready for the hard-hitting questions. We
I
ask,
am.
Like,
yeah,
what's
yeah,
it
exactly.
like to saw a mannequin's arm off? Yeah. Do you get to use ice pick all the time?
That's right.
Is it cool when you are killing guys?
The fancy episodes of this podcast are pretty much the Chris Farley show from SNL. It's like, remember when you said
remember
that thing?
When
that was
you said
cool.
Love is all you need? Is that true?
No, Chris, it's not.
Cool.
All right, cool. So let's talk a little bit about your character, Calvin Bunker. This is his first season.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He was in the finale last season.
Yeah.
Cut
definitely the first.
Right, yes.
Exactly. Or burned it off.
Burned his brothers.
Little creme brulee on that motherfucker.
And now we're seeing Calvin is a huge part of this season, and episode 5 specifically is a big Calvin episode.
Yeah,
kills two people in one ep.
Yeah, right. I know. You guys got to see that way before me too. They just sent that to me yesterday. I was like, "Fuck!" I almost. It's funny how you film that stuff and you kind of like live in it in the moment, but then you know now it's a year later almost. It's all blurry. It's like you would think that
it would be burned in your head.
Right, but no, it's almost like it's like burned in Calvin's head, but when you leave, you know, I've got a wife and two little girls. Like I have to leave the Nazi on stage, you know? And like and now a year later, yeah, I'm like watching that episode like, "Oh my fuck."
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, that's like for all you listeners to High and Mighty and other podcasts, when someone tweets at you, Sean, you host a podcast, when someone tweets at you with something you said on a podcast from like 5 weeks ago, and you're like, you got to know that I'm just spewing garbage
right
for an hour.
Autopiloting.
Hey, heads up, Sean, just so you know, Dario Argento didn't direct that movie. You're like, I don't care, man. Yeah. I don't fucking remember. Or like someone comes up to you and quotes a podcast thing to you or quotes a character's thing, and you're like, I actually haven't seen that cut. I have no idea what you're talking about. Right. Episode 5. So let's talk about Calvin. So Had you known Banshee before you got the audition?
Dude, I like you guys, and I was thinking about this earlier, so the people that you've brought in from the show and interviewed, most of them have been on board since the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Me, I was a fuckboy fanboy like you guys who was aiming for the show. It was like, I want to get on that fucking show. But as you guys know, I mean, being in the industry, like, there's no real way to be productive about, like, getting on a show that you want to get on. You just have to wait for a character to show up that maybe you match up with.
Yeah, you have mm-hmm. to, like, you have to tell your agents, you have to, and pray.
Right, and just hope something comes. And then even if you maybe match up with it, you're still just, like, throwing your number, your name into the fucking hat, right. You know? And so I had, early on, maybe season one, season two, auditioned for, like, some smaller role. Couldn't even tell you what it was at this point. Didn't get that. Was bummed out. And then a year and a half, almost 2 years went by, and I ended up with an audition for, is his name Lewis? The hacker who takes Job.
Oh, right. Leo.
Leo, yeah. There we go, yeah. So I put myself on tape for that, and less than like 2 weeks later, I get another appointment for Banshee, a different role, and there wasn't like a lot to it. In fact, at first I kind of thought like, shit, I would rather have that hacker role, because like all the description was like a leader of the local Aryan Brotherhood. And season three hadn't come out yet, so we had yet to know anything about Tom Pelfrey or right. You know, Bunker.
Who plays Bunker,
your brother. Right? Exactly. And so on the page, and certainly in the character description, it seemed like maybe a smaller role. And being a fan of the show, you know, we'd kind of gone in and out of white supremacy and seen them here and there in
town.
Yeah,
it was a very fringe element of Banshee, yeah. Where it was like every once in a while they'd
you'd
pop
see
up.
One of them. Yeah. And so yeah. I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to be one of those dudes.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get on this fucking, the only show that I literally sit down and watch every week. Like, yeah. I hope it's, not that I wouldn't take, I would have fucking taken it. Like, if right. Good would have like flicked a fucking snot rocket at yeah. me, I would have been like, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I would have been a guy that gets his hand cut off. Like,
yeah, exactly. Anything. Any day. Yeah, yeah, let's do it.
Not me.
No, yeah. You
it's got to be the
five,
right role. It's just, it diminishes my value.
Amen. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, the only person in Hollywood still holding on to integrity. So anyway, put myself on tape for that Bunker role, and next thing I know, I get a text message from Adam Targum, who I didn't even know was a part of the show.
But you knew him?
But I knew him. He put me in the first movie I ever did 8 years ago, a little genre indie called Rogue River, and fucking get a text from him that's like, hey, great read, looking good, I got your back. And I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? And he's like, I'm one of the new writer EPs on Banshee. And I literally like dropped my phone and picked my wife up. And yeah. was like,
oh, that's like the actor's dream. It's like, I now have an inside.
Like, holy shit, I'm the yeah. guy with a guy. Like, yeah. that never fucking happened.
Yeah, worst comes worst, I don't get this. Maybe he looks out
yeah,
for something
exactly,
else.
Exactly.
Yeah, just knowing that someone's on the yep. on board. On
you realize how bad the odds are every time you audition for a show where you don't know a writer
EP. Oh, exactly.
EP.
Oh,
yeah. You're like, well, somebody knows them.
Right.
Even when you have some friends. Yeah.
And even when you know a guy, it's still not guaranteed. Like,
no.
I still had to jump through more hoops. Like, he had my back, but Tropper and I think Yatane as didn't know me, didn't know anything, and were like, yeah, I don't know. Because like now I feel I'm so grateful that they kind of took a chance. I think that when you think, you know, last season Big Bad Nazi leader guy, I don't know that I'm the look that like necessarily comes to mind right away. And
well,
so,
I brought that up in another episode that I thought it was really interesting.
I know, you
really
called me a dweeb. I loved that shit. I loved it. I was like, God.
Well, because when you're working in the office, that is the way you read. Right. And then when you go to like right. actually fucking like put a guy's head in a vice,
right.
it's like that reads is like, oh, this dude's a badass. But it's a very, it's a thin, like, it's a needle to thread.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that was a conscious move too. With really, it kind of started with wardrobe. Frank, the head of wardrobe, brilliant, brilliant guy, was like, you know, what if we make your suits just like not really fit that well?
Yeah.
And you just kind of like, you hate that fucking job, but you have to do it. You need a cover. You need a regular fucking taxpayer's job. And like,
so,
you buy the cheapest,
awesome,
like, Men's Warehouse shitty suits.
And well, like, it's a great lair, and the character overall, I mean, we didn't know this when we meet him last season, but it's like, you're just seeing him frustrated everywhere. Like, he's kind of under somebody's thumb.
Well, that's what's fun.
Everywhere he goes.
If you re-angle the POV of the show and you put it into Calvin Bunker's POV, it's literally about, like, it's like a sitcom of a guy's struggle. His boss at work sucks. His boss in his club, which happens to be the Aryan Brotherhood, is an asshole who's in jail.
His wife's fucking around on him.
His wife's a
fucking brother.
His father-in-law's a real asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of like every sitcom cliche overplayed a leader of the Aryan Brotherhood.
Right, exactly. There was like a joke, running joke on set, where every episode up until episode 5, right about, there's multiple moments in different scenes with Calvin that end with Calvin is left to stew in his own juices.
Yeah, he's just eating shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't fucking believe this is happening again.
Yeah, exactly.
That moment in when after the guy's head is crushed in the vice and Burton throws you the bat, and when Burton walks away and you turn and throw the bat at the lesser guy. It's like, such a funny moment. I'm take it, it's
fucking bat.
He's my boss, but I'm someone else's boss.
Yeah, it's like reaffirming of your alpha in that moment. Yeah.
And I can't remember now if that was Pony Joe right there, too, that I threw the bat to, which is who, that's my best friend that gets pulled apart in episode 5.
Right. Oh, shit. Right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the most brutal deaths.
That's one of the craziest ones.
I love this.
We're talking about you crushing a guy's head in a vice earlier, and that doesn't touch this.
Yeah. What was that filming like? Because that's like, that's got to be.
Gnarly, dude. Yeah, because,
What's the actor's name that plays your father-in-law? He's so awesome.
Chance Kelly.
Yeah, dude. He's the godfather from Generation Kill.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
The guy who has a voice like that.
Yeah, dude. And he's so, he's one of those just like great, unbelievably underutilized fucking actors. Like that dude.
Yeah, it's one of those guys, and when you're like, where do I know that guy from? And if you're a group of 5 people, everyone knows him from something
from
different.
One thing. Yeah, but like, nobody.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
He was in that? Yeah, that's what I love him in. Oh, I love him in Generation Kill. Oh,
and
I
he
love
plays
him.
Different dudes in fucking all of
right,
them. It's
exactly.
Like, yeah, he's a great, great actor. I had him over to the house, actually. Me and my wife fed him and his daughter dinner the night before I chopped his fucking head off.
So awesome. Well, it's that moment's funny because he's, like, funny about his, like, the way he's running the Aryan Brotherhood. He's like, it's like simple to him.
Right. Yeah. Well, because he's Mr. Untouchable.
Right.
Like, he knows, like,
he just got out of jail on whatever.
Right, exactly.
It's something that I've actually talked about on the show before, where everyone is giving everyone else a reason to kill them at all times.
Of course.
And anyone can get to anyone, but they're all very confident about it. Like, it's like, we've seen you break into Kurt Bunker's home and burn his chest off, but he's still confronting people and being like, you're fucking next on my list. It's like, wait, why do you feel okay doing this?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you live in the same house. You don't have, like, a new security system.
Right. Exactly.
Like,
nothing's
what
changed.
Happened?
Everyone is just, like, grinning at the end of a gun in their face.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like...
They're just like, well, it can't happen to me.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
but you've seen it happen to everyone.
Yeah, on the one show where, like, it can literally happen. Like, next episode, they could just fucking kill everyone and start over.
Yeah.
Because, like,
not a show to be a difficult actor on, I bet.
Yeah, no.
Where
exactly.
It's like the producers are just going to be like, oh, you're a problem at all? Like,
Tropper,
it's so easy to kill
Tropper's
you.
Tropper's so candid about that, too. I think you guys were at the premiere, right?
Yeah.
And before they started it, he even said, he's like, you know, we've been lucky. We've had mostly great people working with us on both sides of the camera, and the assholes that worked with us, we fucking fired them real quick.
He said that in his
opening speech. He's like, yeah, we fucking fired those assholes.
He's like, we had a mostly great people, and if they weren't, we fired them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all right, here's the episode.
And here's the 3 seasons condensed into 3 minutes, roughly, which translated means here's 300 deaths.
Oh, man.
Like,
we've said this on the episode before, too, but if you watch a sizzle reel of the catch-up of 3 seasons
so
of Banshee,
good.
How do you not do you not tune into the show?
Exactly.
That moment where
exactly.
You're like, just to at least see how all the pieces fit together.
Right.
And you're
yeah.
like... All right, Aryans, Native Americans, military, Asian drag queen. You know, it's like you keep jumping around.
Speaking of all this, I loved this. There was another episode of you guys' show, and you were talking about how whoever is in control of background and how, like, every season, like, all of a sudden, like, in every shot, there's a military guy. Because now there's a fucking military base right now.
Right.
Like, it's such a no-rules, no-problem show.
Yeah.
I fucking love that. Like...
It is.
Yeah,
really
that's funny. Amazing. The only thing I guess that they do really, they are beholden to in terms of like the logic and rules of the world is the character's internal psyche. Like they do right. have to live in the like bed they made.
Right.
Of course, in terms of like now everyone's so fucked up because they've all seen so many people die in so many ways that like. This season feels darker, like there's more of a pall over it.
There's no way you can, like, Brock, you're like, who's like the lighthearted, like the straight man of the world. Brock is even in this, he's like, I see so much fucking shit. Man.
You guys saw the yellow tape, right? Yeah, I don't fucking care anymore. Let's be real, we're all gonna fucking die anyway. Like,
yeah.
Dude, he's so fucking good.
I should have doing something I should have done a long time ago. Or he's like, when he's talking to Hood in this one, he's like, what are you doing, Hood? He's like, so frustrated.
It's so good. So
this episode also introduces us into another, we'll get back to more Calvin stuff in a second, but introduces us to another unseen a portion of the Banshee population that is yet to be spoken about, the devil worshippers and the body mob.
That's right. We forgot that the devil worshippers live there. And there
well, they've got to. I mean, you're essentially in hell. Like, they've got to be there.
That, more than every community that's been introduced, like when they go into that like underground club. Sex club or whatever, I was like, I wonder if this does exist in every town.
Right.
Like, because it's like, if there was a military complex or even an Aryan compound, like, near my house, I think I'd know. I'd, like, see them.
Right.
But this, I'm like, this could just be happening.
Right.
I think that is
this
happening.
Is in every underbelly.
Yeah, like, there's Los definitely Angeles. People this fucked up.
Oh,
and so and they're going to find each other.
Right.
So why wouldn't they have a weird bar dungeon?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then, so it's all these people that are, A, either these people are just body modders that have maybe do devil worship or are all devil worshippers that happen to body modders, but
there's probably some hybrids in there.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of people who feet in both circles. I'm sure there's the Venn diagram.
Yeah.
And then but maybe they're devil worshippers, but not with the fucking serial killer guy. But all that being said, then they go like, where do you get your work done? It's like, Doctor Quick, he works out of the back of a dry cleaners. It's like another insane location.
Another
insane location of Banshee where you think at some point this town is small enough that Hood or someone has been everywhere. Or you've at least heard of the fucking guy who's working out of a dry
the
cleaner.
Crazy body mod surgeon in the back of the dry cleaner.
Yeah. Right. So only true. On this show, it's like, nope, you learn about this on episode 48.
Right. Like if there was an overhead map of Banshee, every season, a little bit of like the fog of war gets removed and there's just this like huge other world.
Yeah, it's like
in
a
there.
Video game where you unlock a new area.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, this is where the Aryans live. Well, in this episode, we also see the drive-through Aryan party where they're having like a dazed and confused
Which
party
was
at the moon.
It should have like a Lord of the Rings map. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a weird fantasy element to it where it's like,
it's so
this
true.
Is the elf world. Yeah.
This is the house Hood lives in that's in the woods that no one found him in for 2 years.
Yeah, it's like beautiful and serene and just like, it's like.
But like, he's been picked up and dropped off there 5 times since this season started.
Right,
He was able to disappear for a year and a half. Right. Let's talk about that scene at the party at the Moon Tower, but for Nazis, where they're watching Nazi propaganda footage on
just
a big
on loop
screen
in the
TV.
Background. Yeah, that was like a real drive-through in like a kind of rural little town right outside of Pittsburgh.
It's a beautiful setting.
100 Aryans ready to party.
Oh yeah, you see,
it was
you
very
see,
fucking Banshee.
You saw more girls than you thought were in the Aryan Brotherhood.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, at that part, they're like, it's a party scene. They're
gotta have some chicks.
Got some babes.
There's I think that we see Calvin and he's sitting on a flatbed looking like fucking Charlie Brown. He's got like his head down and his hands folded.
He just pulled his best
the
friend
apart. The only guy not having fun at the party.
Yeah, exactly.
And his father-in-law is everyone's happy that he's
there
here.
There were so many Aryans that day too who like, you know, whether they watched the show or not because Calvin's new to the show, were like walking by and seeing this other fellow Aryan extra sitting sadly on the back of that El Camino. And they would like come by and be like, hey bro, what's up? It's supposed to be a party. We got to like liven it up a little bit. I'm like, yeah, I'll get there.
Yeah.
I'll get there, buddy.
Save your notes for the other extras.
It's funny, like, because everyone in the show is in some way a bad guy, except for like Brock. It is, you know, from every character's perspective, someone else is the villain. Like, it's like, even like you burning your brother's chest off, you know, at the time it's like, this is the worst guy I've ever seen. And then it's like, no, I was saving your life.
Yeah,
because if Watts, I hadn't done this,
yeah, Watts is going to, and it's like, you know, and that feels like maybe something he's saying. And then when you meet Watts, you're like, no, he's going to kill him.
Right,
like,
right,
this was, this brought right. this dude a year.
Yeah.
So it is like weird, like the everyone's like has their own version of morality.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Your character's like, I didn't want to kill my fucking best friend. It's like, oh, he is like tortured and suffering and trying to do this the right way.
Right. But also the weird the Aryan ideology of just like, it's not about the money, Watts. Like, that's
right.
So
he's
funny.
A purist.
Right. Yeah. You're just like, yeah. I'm in this for the look, the tech. Like,
right. Exactly.
I'm not. This is not a gang. Well, he's to just me. Like this is a belief system.
Right. Yeah. He was born into it. That was kind of like that was a thing that we consciously decided on in the beginning, and then also maybe like the biggest goal or obstacle for us was like, can we make the audience feel bad for a Nazi? Like, can we make them be like, fuck, this poor guy maybe never had a choice. And these are the philosophies that he was, like, kind of born into and, like, raised to believe in. And, like,
they warm the audience up for that a little bit with your brother character. Like, we you get sympathy for him first. And then it's like, now meet the bad.
It's even harder, the little brother. You're pitted against him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
you like that guy right away. Like, like Kurt. And then it's like, well, this is his enemy. So I hate this guy. But then as you see what.
But then
your
you see Calvin, like, with his wife who's cheating on him, but he still loves. And then his son. Who's
When he says, we got to kill Calvin. When the wife says, we got to kill Calvin, you're like, oh, fuck you. You're like, no, Calvin, hey, you know, Kurt, that's your
Calvin's
brother.
Getting
like,
nothing but sudden, shit on.
Do you know what this guy's going through?
Right.
Yeah, he's in a weird version of American Beauty or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're seeing him at the end of this episode, like, finally snap, like, take control of one thing.
Right.
And just, like, and it feels like a real
Let's jump to that moment right now, because that's such a fucking...
It was awesome.
We'd seen
it. Cool.
We'd seen Calvin fantasize killing his boss.
Right.
So in almost the same way. Like stabbing him in the neck with a pen.
When this happens, when you stab your father-in-law in the base of the neck with an ice pick, there is a split second. We talked about it when Calvin kills his boss in the fantasy where, like, this is Banshee. That could have actually happened.
It's right,
the
exactly.
First time I think we were like, whoa, that wasn't real.
Right, exactly.
And then I was like, oh, shit. And then when you kill your father-in-law, we're like, Is this a fantasy? Oh, no, wait, never mind. Yes.
Yeah,
the next shot is you butt naked, buzzing his arm off with a fucking table saw.
Yeah, guys. That's right. Right.
What?
Were you guys ready for that? Like, were you anticipating it at all when Watts walked down into the
basement? No, I thought he was going to be around for longer.
He
was such a great, like, character.
But isn't it funny how Banshee can do that? Like, or at least for me, when I was, because, you know, when you're reading the scripts, even as a fan of the show, you still know that, like, anybody could go at any time. Like, if there's ever been a show that, like, will introduce juggernaut characters and then just kill them anyway, it's fucking Banshee. And so it's funny how it can do that to you, though. Like, you can watch it or read it and be like, well, there's no way they're going to kill him, even though they've done that to 1,000 other people. There's no way he's going to die
right now.
Well,
this dude's been talked about for, like, five episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he's finally introduced, and he's such a problem for so many people.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's like, wow, what are the complications of this going to unfold? And then it's like, nope, he's fucking toast.
Well, that's, that's like the whole thing about the show, and it's less about, even less about killing people. It's more about, like, they don't tease you with story. Like, you know, like when it's like Job's been kidnapped, it's like, all right, well, that's the season long premise. Never mind.
No,
we got him. We got him later that episode.
Right.
Oh, the guy who kidnapped Job, he's got to be the bad guy. No, he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Watts is the guy we're dealing with. Watts is the guy we're dealing with this episode. Boom.
Right.
He's dead. Holy shit. Who's like,
yeah. And Watts actually, like, it solves a big problem for the show too, because if he is around, he has to be trying to kill Kurt Bunker.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, like,
oh, wait, we had to backpedal a second.
So it's like you're saving your brother, too.
Again, and he's still fucking my wife.
Let's back, you just reminded me, let's backpedal to Kurt's attempt to maybe kill Watts in police uniform.
So, that was such a funny
thing. Like, he was on his way home from being on duty, and he was like, you know what? I bet they're out at that fucking drive-thru again.
I've got that huge sniper rifle in my car.
God, I'm glad I brought that 50 cal today.
Gordon's from last season.
All right, Gordon, the best reveal ever. And then, I'm also a vet.
Yeah.
And Brock and his just like kind of casual conversation. Like Brock like, what the fuck are you doing?
He's Kurt,
like,
grow up, Kurt. He's like, you're being a baby.
You know there's GPS in your car, right? And you have a uniform on.
Yeah, that you was a big part of his problem. Like, it wasn't like, you can't assassinate someone with a sniper rifle. It was like, dude, you're in your car. You're in your uniform. Like, this is a bad look for the sheriff's department.
Like, he almost was like, all right, take one shot. You can have one shot. We'll
see. But Kurt has that great line in that moment, too, where he goes, That was a good speech.
Good speech.
He's like, that was a pretty good speech. Like, he's like, all right, fine. All right. We won't kill him yet. Oh, shit. And then that's what you think, too, because you're like, oh, they're setting up Kurt versus Watts. That's going to be an awesome showdown when Watts comes for him. And Kurt's got to defend his sister-in-law / paramour. And instead, Watts is dead like two seasons.
Exactly. How far ahead are you aware of your storyline? Just like, because your character isn't introduced as this guy who's super frustrated. He is introduced as somebody who's in control. Like, right. Do you know that's coming for it? Or
No. So generally, we're like maybe one script ahead of what we're shooting, one or two.
But there's not like a EP meeting where they're like, you're going
to
be
like, ultimately, this is what's going to happen. No, because they're always ready to pivot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I think is, you know, that's why it's such good storytelling, because Tropper and Greg and Adam and, of course, like the rest of the writing team, like they're all just ready to turn on a dime. Like somebody comes in with a good idea, or somebody's like, you know, I heard you guys talking on the show before about how, like, you'll be in one of you guys that works on an animated series, and how you'll be in the writer's room, like, showing them clips of different stuff, trying to, like, spark inspiration. Same kind of thing, I think, happens on Banshee, like, because not just, like, the story will go in a totally different direction than you were anticipating, but also, like, you'll get the first draft of the script, and then by, like, the fifth draft, like, it's a whole fucking different, like,
you right, know? Yeah.
Always better, though.
Yeah.
Always better. I don't remember a single moment in all of season four where me and my wife weren't just thrilled with whatever changes were happening.
Right.
And also, there were so many times we were reading scripts, and it's like, you turn the page, and you're like, and then Calvin saws off his oh my fucking God. Like, you're like, holy shit. Like, what did we get into?
That's so exciting. Like,
oh, it's so good.
And especially,
it's like the
Calvin,
best fucking job ever.
Right? And Calvin seems like he's going to be this one-note foil for his brother early
on. Right,
exactly. And then when he's waiting for Kurt outside the house to be like, hey, get bro, back. Yeah, right, yeah. Right. It feels like you're like, oh, that's just what they're... And then all of a sudden, now the Aryan Brotherhood is in with Proctor, way bigger part. Now Calvin is like, your part grew like exponentially in to the point where you've killed three people in two episodes.
Right, exactly, exactly. It cost me a lot of money. Moving on. but I have to say too, like, that's just a testament though to again to Tropper. I mean, I think he said when he was on your guys' show that like, his attitude and approach to the show is not just like, what's the most fun, but like, what have I never seen before? Let's do that. What have we not seen? Let's put all our eggs in that basket and fucking really go for it. It's like, dude, that was my boss. Yeah. How the fuck? Like, if that's your boss's attitude, then like, you just trust that guy.
Yeah,
you
and
go wherever he wants to
be. It's funny, after
you
doing three full seasons of that attitude too, then for season four, you really are like, what have we not seen and not done? And having that be our mission statement for 3 years.
What
like,
was
what
that
have we
meeting
done?
Like? And like, how many minutes of just silence was there in the beginning?
Yeah.
After
yeah.
It was like, what have we not seen or done before? It was just everybody sitting there trying to figure that out.
Well, like, that's the thing. You've seen like someone get killed with an ice pick before in like Basic Instinct and Goodfellas. You've seen guys kill their father-in-law or their crime boss, but you've never seen a guy who's been shit on so bad, who you're concerned for, who just casually
and does
it
so matter of fact.
That's
like,
what the best part about that kill is, because that could easily be a passionate like,
dude,
this is my house,
right.
You know?
Me and Lonnie and I, Lonnie who directed episode 5, him and I spoke specifically to the effect of like, death is simple and should be simple in this scene. It should be something that happens. One second, Watts is alive and an asshole, and the next second, he's dead and not a problem.
So it's
and like,
so
there should be
dude
nothing.
Is just decided.
Right,
like, there's
exactly.
nothing more
it's
to
over.
It.
Over. Yeah, yeah. There should be just like
this is done now. It's
one
time.
Stroke and then a breath, and it's fucking over.
I love that because then we also now see we've seen Calvin have to kill a friend of his. Imagine killing his boss. Killing the guy who is killing the guy in the vice, and each time he's actually killed someone, it's been with like just it has to be done, like the crank of the, the crank of the vice. The killing your friend was just something you had to. There was passion in that one because you didn't want to do it. But then when you imagine killing someone, it's out of fury. But that's not. I don't feel like that's what Calvin would.
Right?
Actually
yeah. No. No.
Do.
No. He's not.
Calvin is more just like.
He's a pretty calculated guy.
Yeah. Killing your father-in-law, killing Watts is pretty much the. Doing your tri-quarterlies.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well, now extremely this is done, practical decision.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Now we got to cut him up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get any blood on my clothes.
Right. We spoke on that too. It was like, what if, you know, because he's already not just a neo-Nazi, but he's like the leader of the local Aryan Brotherhood. We've already shown him fucking blowtorch his own brother's chest. Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's already enough things in your face to where, what if we don't play this guy like a monster? What if he's a businessman?
Yeah.
What if he's a guy who like approaches life in a step-by-step manner?
And he's
like,
living
these are
by
the things
his,
that need to get done.
He's living by his own ethics.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
They're awful and against, you know, the ethics of America. But like his moral code is like, no, we're not getting into business with Proctor. We can't take orders from him. He's Dutch. He's not, you know.
Right, exactly. Like if we're living by this rule book, then let's fucking live by it.
That's a great moment when Calvin says that to Watts. It's like, why do we got to do what this Dutchie says or whatever? And I was like, oh right, it's not just white people like that.
You can
be white and we can still hate you.
Still hate you. Yeah, in fact, you could be like the whitest white there is.
Right, because you would think that Ulrich or Proctor would be on their side because he's like as white as you can
as you
be.
Can get. Like no.
It's so awesome.
Wrong kind of white.
Right.
It's a very narrow.
Yeah.
Definition.
There's no paying at the door to get into the club. Like you're fucking out.
And it's in that moment. It's like oh. Calvin has this belief system that he's going to live by. He's going to
be
like, I don't want us to be under the thumb of this guy.
Right.
It was convenient to have money to keep the club in when, and it was a mutual beneficial thing. Now we're in overhead. Now we're a drug ring.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I also like when Watts calls out that the Mexican cartel is involved just based on the amount that's needed. Like,
yeah, he's like, that amount usually means beaners.
That amount usually means beaners. And if we're doing that, we're going to need a little more money.
Right, exactly.
So funny. Watts has a great line to Kurt, too, where he's like, we could bring you back into the fold. Your knowledge of the inside workings of the BSD, the Banshee Sheriff Department, is like, it's three people that you guys have been operating around for years. I don't think you need an inside scoop on the
police force. What's he sharing? Like, tactically, the Sheriff's Department would show up with guns now. So, like, let's be ready.
It's like,
and it's like, what other? There's only like one way that this is going to go down anyway. There's like, the way that it goes down in Banshee. It's going to be a lot of bullets
and
blood.
It's
going
to be a standoff, man. Right. Like, that's just whenever they figure out where we are, they're gonna try to shoot us, we'll shoot them.
Right.
And also if he brings Kurt into the fold and Kurt's working for the Aryan Brotherhood in the police force, that leaves almost only one cop that we've named that isn't working for a different higher
power. Because Cruz is working for Proctor.
Right, exactly. All the other good cops were assholes and got fired, so like there's no
god, everyone has so many enemies too, like,
right, because
exactly. Cruz also, this is the episode right where she eyeballed Bunker,
she sees like, that Bunker is helping,
how fucking
help,
good
yes.
is Anna too, she's great.
She's
it's
awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
It's great.
I like also Job is. This is a good Job episode too because we see him bounce back.
Of yeah,
I don't
happy.
Do windows. You hear the little bit
you
of the
hear
Job.
It, oh man,
yep, he's becoming himself again. Good. I love the scene between him and Hood on the porch it was like they're forgiving each other
because
you're like, how is he ever gonna forgive Hood? Like, is this just gonna be a thing where they aren't friends again?
Right.
And,
just
and
like,
that was
nope.
I love
good.
Those two because it's like those are the moments where Banshee kind of. Rears its head and shows you that, like, no, we're not just the greatest action show on television. Like,
yeah.
We can tap into, like, emotional substance, maybe just as good or better than anybody
else. Real grounded
like,
relationship.
That shit was
so
real between the two of them on that porch.
You
Hood
give a fuck.
Is
you
the
want
baddest
them to be
motherfucker
friends.
On the planet, and those eyes are wet because he loves his friend.
Yes,
I was so
that was so good.
It was like a relief when they reconnected. I was like, oh, thank God, they're friends.
Exactly,
and they're not just gonna be dealing with it for the rest of the episode, where or for the rest of the season,
right,
where it's
right.
like somehow him trying to find a way for Job to forgive him and not being able to really apologize. Like they're just gonna fucking do it in one moment, totally believable.
Right.
It's like you were in prison for 15 fucking years.
Yeah,
right.
Which, like, they do that,
and you forget.
Too.
Like,
yeah, and that's a great reminder where he's like, "You didn't fucking, you know, I didn't break you out after 2 years of you being in like,
right.
yeah.
the worst situation."
Yeah, he's like, "It could have been way worse. Could have been 15 years."
Yeah, and you're like, "Oh fuck, right." But Hood never brings that up, which
right.
I think is, you know, and it's like, it's that whole moment is. This is a weird comparison, but you know, like in all those like bromance, funny comedy movies where it's like. Michael Cera and Jonah Hill get in a fight and then they don't talk for 20
yeah.
that always ruins the movie because what you like about the movie is the two buddies being
right
funny.
Exactly
it's like,
yeah, yeah
it's like we know they're gonna get back together but this is a bummer right now
right.
and it's supposed to be a comedy
and for whatever reason people feel like they need to drag that shit out
right.
and it's like dude I swear again like that's just Tropper and like whoever else was writing or whatever but really in the end it comes down to I think Tropper and probably Greg having faith in their audience
right
knowing that like no, we don't need to drag out this one storyline and spoon feed our audience these facts and then end it, you know, with a bow. We can give them this, end it, and move on. We can give them 10 fucking goals in one episode.
Great moment.
And they'll follow.
Yeah.
And just so happy to see Job being Job again. When he comes down and Cruz is there,
That is a great moment.
That is a so great good. Moment. He's like, can I help you, deputy? And she's like...
Yeah, there's a lot of those exchanges where both people know they're not talking about what they're talking... Like, even like when Hood gets interviewed by the FBI agent
for the
first time. But like... That was such a good version of it.
So great when she's like, oh, because you parked pretty far down the driveway.
He's like, we didn't call no cops. And she's like, must have been your neighbor. And she's like, he's like, right. Well, we ain't got none of them.
So. Yeah. And she's pretty like, far away. And she's like, well, there's a lot of surveillance equipment for a house. It's like, yeah, well, I guess.
And I love like, keep...
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. It's just like every fucking line.
Dude,
it's
so
that
good.
Like thing with the bat.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're, like putting your hand on top of each other.
Right.
It's like.
And they keep utilizing that gate between characters.
I love,
you know? It's like.
So who pointed that out to us? O.C. Madsen pointed out that mm-hmm. gate is the. Like prison. It's like
right.
the
exactly.
that's when you Job is I mean Hood has been talking through bars for a majority
right
of the movie,
exactly
closing
yeah.
in front of him in between him and
yeah.
A love
and like that moment between
Carrie.
Him
yeah.
and Carrie too
yeah,
where
yeah.
like and you kind of even though I fucking read the script I know what's happening and I still like I said you forget I'm like sitting there watching it like a fanboy again
yeah
and I'm like oh there's you know they're on opposite sides of the threshold and it's gonna end that way and then when that fucking gate opens Ant's so good at like. Just like one expression on his face will
yeah.
tell like a whole fucking episode's worth of story on
I send
network.
These guys screen grabs of Anthony's eyes because
mm-hmm.
he's got like he's like all grit and stubble
right.
but his eyes are like ice blue and gleaming like glistening
yeah.
wet at any given
right,
moment
exactly.
he just blinks once and you're like please help yeah. me give that puppy a little
Fuck,
treat
so good
like you want Hood to just have something go right in his life there's in this episode is a moment that I totally went out of my head that I would affect Aunt was like, so you really didn't know she was pregnant, huh? I'm sorry. And you're like, oh, right. That's
right, man.
You forget like Hood is just like, you think he's like, I'm out. He's out for vengeance. But
right.
you forget a woman that he had some sort of complicated relationship with that arguably saved his life.
Yeah.
After Job went away, he knocked her up
right
it's like,
and cares
and right
like how do you make the man with no name human like
right.
it's so fucking good
I forget like in that moment I'm like oh right he might give a shit that
yeah.
he knocked a girl up and then she was murdered
right.
like I didn't even register to me and another favorite action movie trope is in this episode too and it's the second time it's happened this season when Job shaves his beard and head you're like
oh
yes
he's back baby
That is so the I told Chopper that. It's the Rambo tying his headbands. It is. We see Anthony do it when we see Hood do it in episode one where it's like, we got to get back to it. And now Hood is, when we see Job shaving his head, you're like, yes. And I was praying, like, this is me just rooting for too much, but I was hoping we saw him, like, go through Carrie's closet, like, looking at dresses and, like, judging them. I expected that to be the next scene, like,
yeah. It'll have to do.
Do you have anything that ain't black, girl? You know? I'll have to do.
Did that line already happen where he talks about? Oh, I don't want to fucking spoil it.
Let's not spoil. Great. At the end of that cruise interview, at the end of that cruise conversation too, reveal that Job has a pistol in his hand.
Oh yeah,
exactly. Like just coming back, like oh man.
Yeah, I guess.
He's ready to kill.
I'm just the band is getting back together. I'm just dying for the three of them to talk to Sugar and be like,
yes,
Sugar,
when is Sugar gonna really join the fold again? He's still so standoffish about it all.
I know he's still pissed. He's still pissed at Hood for what happened to Job. But Job's back. I wish like you would see Sugar dropping off a bottle of Jameson or something.
Right. Yeah.
Frankie's so good in that role.
Oh, he's so great.
He's such the town sage. Like, yeah. Just like,
and like just the sweetest guy ever, but right. Then you believe that he also was a criminal and can fight and can box and do this. Yeah. I love all of
them. He's their dad.
Right.
it's like fucking you idiot. Like you need a place to stay.
Exactly. He, like when you go through the seasons, like he literally always has exactly whatever anyone needs when they walk in that bar. Like he's got you.
Yeah, it's like he's like pissed at, like you fucked up, you really made a mistake, and it's like you got a car? Yeah, I got a car.
Yeah, I got a car. And it's also like maybe the baddest fucking car that's ever been made.
Well, what else is he
going
to drive?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, Targum mentioned like the thing I wanted to do with this season was get better cars.
Well, Targum's such a fucking, like that's his love.
Yeah, and then now Proctor drives a Maybach.
Yeah, exactly.
And, or Burton drives Proctor's Maybach.
Right,
and
right.
Fucking Sugar has a convertible muscle car.
Just sitting in that fucking thing on set, that Maybach was like, you just feel big time.
Oh, it's so
I mean, and then you get out of it and you're back in your own life. But like when you're sitting in the back seat of that car, it's like,
we got Dushku smoking crack again.
Oh yeah,
greatest crackhead that's ever been on
she
screen.
She's the
though.
Hottest crackhead.
Yeah,
the most
exactly.
Attractive crackhead.
And like, and you believe in it. Like you're like,
yeah,
you know,
you're not like
you
no way she smokes crack.
No,
you're like yeah, I guess.
Dude, so good.
When she's like,
when she
up.
Kicks that fucking like goes into the crack house and they all run and she sits down and sparks it up. Like
yeah, that was all she was doing, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like
she puts the newspaper down to not dirty her pants. I love that. When she goes, she walks in there like, huh? She's like, put the pipe down.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, like, she smokes crack and does work.
That's what I mean.
Like she's
you're
not
like,
shut
you're
up.
Like, oh, you need it. I so get that.
Oh, right. When she's smoking crack and like looking at the files, and she solves it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I love
they should make a. There should be a spinoff. It didn't even have to be a spinoff, but like anyone listening that's a good writer, like you should write a show about an FBI profiler who smokes crack.
Yeah.
To That'd get
be
to
awesome.
The bottom of
like
it.
Or like an ayahuasca like hippie guy who like goes into trance, like he's like Doctor Strange,
right?
Like,
exactly.
Goes into a trance and solves crimes while he's like hallucinating, right. Talking to like a spirit wolf or some shit. Dushku, they both end up. Dushku and Hood both end up at the gang.
That was probably because I think so often they've had it this season. It's probably happened 4 or 5 times that someone is following someone else without the other person knowing.
Yeah.
And so they show up to save them at the last moment. It happened when Hood saved Lily from the rabid dog people.
And
it happened when
Servito
saved Hood.
Yeah.
It's been a few times. So I think they like didn't want to do that again. Because he does show up at the absolute perfect moment, saves her, and it's like, oh, was he following her? And she's like, how'd you know I was here? He's like, I didn't. I just.
No, that's happened. One of my favorite lines. He's like, I didn't know you'd come here, too.
Just breaking the pattern that they've established. He goes, I didn't.
Yeah. It's like, oh, he must have been following her. You just immediately think he's like, no, I just also was like.
No, this kid drew a Crayola picture.
I saw a crayon drawing, and I go, does this guy have horns? He goes, maybe they're like, how would you not assume that the kid was like maybe like traumatized?
Which is showing that like Hood must have been to that club once before, or at least
maybe,
knew about it,
or got some call there in an unseen episode where
it's like
there's a drunk brawl,
which is crazy when you think about that. Like, fuck, what goes on Monday through Thursday in Banshee?
Well,
how many
we used to talk about the show before we got on the podcast, we'd be like, what is it like being a cop that, like, for the other cops that are like, hey, where's the sheriff? It's like, I think he's at an army base with like three of his friends, like fighting against the special forces? It's like, well, someone has to go fix the traffic light. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of how crazy his life has been, there is a good moment in the show where they like they say something to him where they're whatever. It's like, you know, why was your blood in our car? Or something. He goes like, well, it doesn't make me a murderer. And it's like, but you are a murderer.
Yeah, you murdered like you're fuck serial killer. You are a mass murderer. Yeah.
Like, does it make me a murderer? It's like, that's a sticking point for you. All you like, do is kill people.
There's got to be hundreds of bodies.
Like, you have a higher kill count than the serial killer you're hunting, right?
He's oh, like, yeah, by yeah, a lot. Right.
You've killed more women than he
has. Right. The serial killer's MO, part of it is like, she's got to be attractive. Yeah. Like, great TV move where it's like, same description as the others. Very attractive female. He's like, oh, that's like a thing.
Well, I think
him.
On a show where your sheriff's department is some of the most attractive men and women.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's Dushkin saying
when
it.
The Nazis are all handsome dudes. Like it's like everyone. The Amish people are good looking with like fake beards.
But is that an FBI thing? Like they come in and look at the victim and they go like, "Well, it's another sexy female."
And they gotta have like an argument about it. Like two partners. Like, well, actually, I don't think she's that hot.
It's like no.
Say six.
Let's say she's an eight. Yeah.
But you, keep in mind her body. It's not in this frame, but she had a pretty good body. It's like what are we talking yeah. about, guys? Like,
she's a real world eight, but dead girl? That's a 10. That's a 10.
And like, not only are these people who have all these different jobs smoking hot, but they all have different jobs in West Pennsylvania.
Yes, which I've been there.
Me too. I've been to Amish country. My dog I got in Amish country. There's an interesting tidbit for you.
So, you know, people listening will know I missed like the last like four episodes of I wasn't here for the episodes like 2, 3, and 4
yeah.
podcasts, and I was like, eh, whatever, I can't make it in time for the interviews. But what I realized as I was watching catching up this week was like, every time an episode ends, I want to talk about it for like an hour. So I was like very frustrated. I was like, oh, I missed the conversation on right. it. Like when I go to talk to John about it, he will have recorded a very long conversation with like the director and two of the stars. And so it's like, I really can't get anything out.
Because yeah. Sean's just like in his bathtub talking about the show this to himself.
This weekend we were at a friend's wedding and I was just being like, and Chopper said, and Matt Rauch said, yeah. like just updating him on all the, I'm like, you don't have to listen to 5 hours of the podcast, right. but here are some right, of the highlights exactly. you missed. That's the exact conceit behind A, my entire podcast was to make a friend talk to me for an hour about a topic we have in common. But B, the Banshee thing was like me, you, and Rogers and Conroy, when we had him around, always just talked about Banshee. And I was like, I think people want to, because even if you don't listen to this, if you don't watch the show, listening to people talk about Banshee out of context is like one of my, we've said it on this before, but it's just like one of the best things ever. It's like, you mean when he had the head in the vice? No, when the fucking guy with the bow tie and glasses came by with the bat and hit the vice and the blood sprayed out of the head. It's like, wait, what? People are like, what are you talking about? Right. So we were like, let's have this podcast. And then this has been so self-serving. And then Cinemax gets on board. It's like, hey, we can send talent. They want to talk. I'm like, fuck you yeah, gotta be fucking exactly. kidding me. It's going to be screaming my opinions in a friend's face. Now right. I'll do it to a near stranger.
Yeah, yeah. You need a space where it's okay to be like, and then I felt bad for the Nazi.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's just a show you want to talk about after there's so much crazy shit. True. You got to unpack it all.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just, you can't have that show just live in your head alone. You right. got to fucking deal
well,
with
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, because like the whole time you're watching, like you don't have time to really sit in any like particular storyline on there. Like you just have to like try and gather everything that's being thrown at you.
I've been like rewatching episodes because like to be like this morning I'm like, let me rewatch 5 since Chris is coming in. And I'm rewatching it. I'm like, I totally forgot about 2 full interactions that are so funny and I'm like so interesting. I'm like, oh right. And that's like we're talking about episode 4. It's like it's really cool. A lot of cool stuff. I'm like, and the flamethrower. I'm like, right, the flamethrower is in that episode.
We haven't dealt with it. Opens with Kai burned Hood's house down.
Yes! We haven't even talked about that.
But that wasn't like a big thing like for this episode. Right. Like, it was a pretty
minor
moment.
One of my favorite parts is like, he says like, he's like, I should kill you now.
And then Hood's like, well, get the fuck on with it. And then neither of them say anything else. They just both turn to the fire and watch Hood's house burn down. In fact, Hood, like, takes a step closer. Like, it's almost like they reach out and hold hands.
They put his arm around
him. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, because he's like, we're in this together. We both want whoever did this to do it. And Kai knows, like, Hood was a very good sheriff in a way, like, or at least good at catching criminals. So it's like, go find this fucking serial killer, man. Well, he knows that he's like
him. He'll just do whatever it takes to get... You know,
yeah.
Right. There is that like little moment where they say like, well, the FBI will arrest this person. You and I will kill this person.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like understood that like even Hood, who is the good guy, at least compared to Proctor, is like, well, you'll still kill him. He's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'll fucking kill him.
Whoever. I get that fucking lumpy headed motherfucker.
Yeah,
alone,
exactly.
The burning house down is really funny because to me it's like he goes, Dushku's giving him a ride like through the woods, which is a super remote area.
Oh,
like, yeah, let me out here. She's like, you sure?
It's
like,
right around the corner. Like, why wouldn't I just drive you to the?
Why wouldn't I drive you? And also, we've seen cars pull up to it. Fire and smoke.
Right.
And she was like, you have to
go ahead.
She was like, you have to take this ride from me. It's way too far for you to walk or whatever. Like, and so he did. But now we know he's walking.
Right. And the first time, like, the only indication of a fire is that you see it in Hood's like gleaming ice blue eyes as he's walking up. It's like,
oh god,
there's a lot of fun Dushku Hood moments in this episode too.
Another like equal like superhuman who he's meeting,
right,
who's like got and just 90 like in, million layers,
right, and just like in the history of Banshee where like every time a beautiful woman shows up, you know, like Hood's gonna fuck her.
Like this is the
Dushku shows up and you're like, oh, that's gonna fucking happen.
This is the longest Hood is gone without boning a woman who's shown up on the show.
Right.
Like, I think Rebecca is 15 minutes, like 5 minutes within meeting her, right?
Dude, well,
yes, that's instant.
Like, I originally, and I've only ever heard this, I never saw it because it didn't make it. It was like left on the cutting room floor, but apparently the first thing, so like, you guys remember that interaction. He had just gotten out of the fight or whatever. He's standing outside is a bar or something, I can't remember now, but he's standing outside and he looks up and sees Rebecca staring at him and he's like, and you are, and then it just cuts to them fucking. But originally it was, and you are, and 18-year-old Lily says, already wet. It's like, fuck.
This is the fuck.
Like, that was too Banshee, even for Banshee season one. Like, they were like,
episode one, right?
They cannot start this show with that line.
We'll just smash cut to them.
To them fucking, yeah, but she can't say that.
Redefining the term smash cut.
It's a good cut, but I like knowing it was in there.
Yeah, right? It's like a cool little Easter egg that you get to keep.
Like, that's so fucking awesome. I'm dying for when Hood and Dushku eventually get together in some sort of crack and alcohol like
exactly induced like just Banshee fuck fest.
So
like,
we have three episodes left.
How insane is that?
We have three episodes left and I feel like so much stuff has to happen. Now we know you have had to have filmed some more scenes, so without I want to just say like things we want to happen or things we want to happen. You don't have to answer, or you know, we could just chime along, but I don't want you to reveal anything.
Let's ruin everything.
Yeah, or get yourself in trouble. But what do you like, what are some things, Sean, you want? I think this is just a fun point because three episodes left is about a super long movie, so a lot, this shit's gonna start winding down. We know they gotta find the serial killer, we know all this.
Mm-hmm.
What stuff are you specifically looking for? This is my favorite thing I'm ready for is Cruz versus
Cruz and Carrie. Yeah.
Cruz and Carrie just that have to like... square off. Because Carrie's been kicking ass. We revealed briefly that Cruz knows some sort of martial arts. They're both smoke shows. You know that there's going to be some fucking battle. I cannot wait. We're going to see... I don't even want to pitch on Calvin in here with Chris here, but I think we're going to see Kurt v. Calvin in some way, or Kurt and Calvin v. someone else.
That would be interesting to me if the two of them had to sort of settle their differences in order to take
stop the cartel or like, Kai or something like that.
Yeah.
Or if in Banshee fashion, it could be Proctor, Hood, the white supremacists, the cops, everyone is fighting the cartel, who is full on invading, just, like, yeah.
Cartel.
Coming in with jeeps and shit like Red Dawn.
It's just like
the cartel and the Satanists, right, who somehow are friends.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's just like, it's just like a 5-second shot of Hood's eyes, and then it just cuts to all of us on a plane. Flying to Mexico.
It's Bad Boys 2. It's
yeah,
Bad
exactly.
Boys 2 ending
exactly.
Where you fight the entire army.
One thing that's interesting is since all of the women on the show kind of look the same. All of the women who are main characters do fit the description of
who?
The victims.
Right, right, right. They're all like
of this satanic thing.
So
I think that someone like, I mean, Dushku could get captured by the Satanists and
right?
be tied up.
Or true. Want to be. She could intentionally.
Yes,
she
could
like,
make herself bait.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
Because
just
her look
like a crackhead
is appropriate
does.
For what they're
right.
doing.
Yeah, right. It's so true.
The female Satanist character was very was different from the other women on the show. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
When it opened, because it opens the
yeah, that's episode four.
Episode
right?
four, right? Opens
that
with the two of them having dinner.
Is so
and you're like,
amazing.
Who's this chick?
You're like, who is this guy and who's this chick and why is he so weird? And
yeah.
Like, and right. then all of a sudden you're like. Oh, they're like having like a normal pre-ritual.
Because we had said, yeah, exactly. no way the serial killer is going to be a character we've never met. Like, that,
right, that
wouldn't
was our-
be
right,
satisfying.
Right,
and
right.
then it's like, no, it's super interesting. It is someone we yeah. haven't met. It should be. Like, because we want to see them collide.
Right. And you just can't help to, like, or at least in my opinion as a fanboy, it's like, no matter who they introduce or how weird he is, like, you just know Hood's going to just fucking annihilate
oh,
this guy.
I can't
like, you're,
wait.
Because how many times is, I think I heard you guys say too, like how many times has it been like the entire police department is like holding outside this building because the guy inside has got like a fucking chain gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Hood's like, he's angry? Fuck this guy. And he just like goes in, you hear a ruckus, and he like drops the gun outside the door. It's like, this guy can't be.
Hood, don't.
Yeah,
he shakes
look
his
back.
Head.
Yeah.
Cervito's like, well, whatever. I get 45 grand a year. you just saying chain reminded me of something that happens in this episode. Fuck it. I thought Burton was going to cut the head off that horse with a chainsaw.
No shit.
I thought
right?
for yeah. sure he was going to decapitate that horse. I was like, I think that's crossing a line. Burton.
Right.
And I love that there's like Amish drama. Dramish, if you will. I love
nice.
That there is like Proctor screaming in whatever the Dutch, I guess, to the people outside on the
right.
the steps. I'm
and
like,
then, yeah. and like seeing Burton kind of like step in and actually like lay a hand on Proctor and be
right,
like,
for the
you need to go inside.
We
and
said this
like,
on the Burton
shit.
Episode that on the episode with Matt Rauch that like Burton is sort of like the only time you see Kai Proctor really lose his cool is when Burton isn't around.
Yeah, of course.
In a weird way, because Burton does all his dirty work for him if need
right.
be, but like he's always like whenever Kai
he's a
is
weird
like
governor
right it's
yeah,
almost
yeah,
like
yeah.
it's almost
he's
like
governor,
he's,
yeah. totally.
They need each other equally
right.
I think
so
like
true.
Whereas Kai like Burton protects him but Kai's also like gonna keep his cool as a mayor. Like, you can't
right.
just fucking start lashing out against...
God, Burton makes Killen look so good. And just, like he's ordering lunch. Like, it's so... Like, it's so easy, he's not even having fun. It's like he's taking a phone number down.
Yeah. He doesn't enjoy anything.
No, exactly.
Yeah, I don't like, think he can, right? Like, what can he possibly enjoy?
Yeah.
Right? We don't know what happened to his genitals.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
one of the questions
yeah.
we asked.
Right. He's like a fucking, he's like a smurf.
Yeah, like we have no, like, you don't know anything about this guy except that he was tortured.
Every
Kai
day.
Kai saved him.
Right,
and
they
now,
took
and
his
he
balls.
So, at some point learned an insane amount of martial arts
right.
and an insane pain tolerance and Wolverine-like recovery abilities.
Exactly.
Him and Hood both.
Yeah.
Him and Hood, like, Hood having the fucking arm brace on in season 3 was like the best thing ever. It's like, oh, I guess an injury lasts
like,
more
just
than
like,
an episode.
Just like his fucking wrist gauze or whatever. It's yeah. like on for every, for like fucking three
or like,
years.
Or the one like cheeks band-aid. Like the Nelly thing on
yeah.
the jeans. Like, right. You got hit with like a guy shot you. Hood got shot in this episode in this season, and we thought he was gonna die. And it's like, wait, that's like the 15th time Hood has been shot.
Yeah.
Why is this
right.
one dangerous?
Right, exactly.
That's right, yeah. And then like what appears to be 12 hours later, she's like nursing the wound. There's no bandage on it.
Yeah.
It's pretty much closed up. It looks like a rash.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It just like yeah. goes from being like a huge hole with blood gushing out to being
right.
a rash.
And she's like, you might have a scar.
Yeah. We talked about this, but another good thing about Banshee, the sex scenes is like, we know they're about to fuck at some point in this episode. And the fact that it starts with like a hand job is like the funniest, like just reaching under his like, visually, like, of course that's how that would start, but not in movies. Like, not in movie. In movies, it's like, start making out, instant mount. But in, like, in Banshee, it's like, she reaches under the blanket and starts, like, beating him off.
Right. Because it's never, because, like, their idea is never, like, you know, what's pretty. It's like, no, how would this, like, what would happen?
Like, dude's, like, half dead lying in a bed. Like, she's sort of there. It's like, she probably got to juice him up a little bit.
Right, exactly. And, like, we do weird shit like that. Like, that is the scenario where, like, all of a sudden you're, like, getting a really dirty, random handy.
Yeah.
You know?
That's you're like, oh, fine, all right. I know I'm not supposed to do this again, but yeah. If you're going to start with the handy.
And then Kai's all pissed about it, like, she was off limits. You weren't supposed to fuck her. And you're like, it's such a weird situation. Like, you know, Hood is never going to explain anything to anyone.
That's
like,
he'll never explain it. In the world
but
of
you would want to be like, dude, it was I was fucking, like, infirm. Like, I was laid out. I couldn't move. Right. She gets on top. Like, what am I going to fuck? Beat her up over it? Like, it's not. Yeah. But, like, Hood's just going to stare at him and be like, what?
Yeah. Right. Well, the same thing with Brock. I'm like, just say you fucking were shot and you fucked her. Like, why would you just say that?
That's right.
Be like, I saved her life. She was about to get her throat ripped out by a dog. Right. She then saved my life back by pretending to be more hurt than she was in a hospital and smashing the medicine cabinet.
Like, well, I think if Hood started explaining stuff, you would hear Brock go, really? Even though the audience saw it, like, Brock would be like, that's not true.
You can't explain any of the scenarios that happened.
Okay. That's kind of like in the world of no rules, Banshee, that's sort of one of the rules is that, like, nothing is off limits for Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the only other two rules are, like, don't cross Hood and don't cross Proctor.
Yeah. And, like, and Hood never answered. Like, there's so many situations Hood's in where he could explain.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to. Because
but he's
got
just
some,
like,
weird code
won't.
Where he's like, no. I'm
well, it's basically like God comes to hell. Like, Hood is God. He's in Proctor's hell. And, like, there, it's just, like, been 4 years of, like, all right, how much death and mayhem has to happen before we finally get, like, this, like, religious-sized fucking face-off
what
battle
has
between
thou
these
wrought?
Two dudes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Hood and Proctor have to have a final reckoning.
Right.
Also, something, like, you're saying, like, if Hood would just say, like, you don't understand, I was infirm, but also Proctor, in this episode, we see that his own niece has tried to keep a safety deposit box for him, drawn a pistol and put it in his face, and he still thinks, like, Hood took advantage of Rebecca. It's like, we've seen her
get a weird blind spot.
Yeah, he does have a blind spot for her. That's obvious. Like, that is something that's true. And for young girls that need help in general, like when he brought in that drifter,
right, to try and, like, replace Rebecca.
Yes, that was an interesting, like, so almost throwaway sequence where it's just like a window into what's going on for him,
right?
And then
he's lost but it's so like that true. Thing where it's like, Proctor, trust that, like, Rebecca is a crime lord who is trying to outwit her own uncle who put her
right,
in
that's
the position.
Yeah, that's
she's killed like a number of people on her own. You don't think you think Hood, like, date raped her?
Right. Like, it's almost like you shouldn't be feeling bad for anybody in this town because they are all just murderous.
Everyone is deserving of whatever happens to them too, which is crazy.
Right.
With the exception of Brock, right? Brock's the only guy. And maybe now Kurt, even though it's like when something bad is going eventually happens to Kurt, you're like, I mean, based on your, like, visible neck tattoo,
you clearly
the years where I didn't know you, Kurt, you were a bad guy.
Right, just now I feel sympathy for you, but you look like you may have done previously, not to judge a book by its cover, but you might have been into some bad stuff. Right. Is there anything else from 405? Anything else from Calvin that
I don't know. Ask Chris. Don't look at me. Ask Chris.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show,
Awesome.
So as always, at the end here, we'll do some plugs, but we'll plug Banshee, 10 o'clock, Friday nights on Cinemax.
That's right.
Get on with it, people. Go to your friends' houses that have Cinemax. Sean will host you. I mean, that's how I first saw Banshee.
Hope you're not allergic to cats.
Because you can't even sit in your car outside your house.
No, you can't be in my neighborhood.
Sean actually is the one who turned me on to Banshee by having me and my wife over to watch season one.
You used to hold, like, little get-togethers and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
That's what people need to do. It's like, God,
you should watch it with a group.
Right.
You shouldn't be dealing with this alone.
Because it's so much fun to, like, just, like, to talk about while it's happening.
You can
and
stop
just
it after basically every scene and be like, holy fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I like Tiffany has fallen off because I need to keep watching episodes at like a more inhuman rate to do this podcast.
Yeah, I had to ditch Grace yesterday to watch two.
She like walked by the computer today and I was like, she's like, what is going on? There's like the neo-Nazi rally. I'm like, oh, so there's white supremacy. Like, you know what? It's like, forget it.
You'll get there.
Chris, anything else you're working on or anything else you want to plug right now?
No, all right.
Nothing. Perfect.
Just
sorry.
Banshee. Watch Banshee. Yeah, and, watch Banshee. You know,
and root for Calvin. Let's see what happens to this poor motherfucker who's living Charlie Brown inside the white supremacy world.
That's right, man. Poor guy.
Clements at Sean Clements on Twitter.
At Sean Clements, and listen to my podcast, Hollywood Handbook.
Yes, listen to your podcast, Hollywood Handbook. Great, fun, ridiculous podcast.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a satirical. Well, you know.
Satirical is an interesting choice of words. Yeah. It is, in a way, a satire, but more it's taking the piss out of everything. That
everything genuinely, complimenting things that I think are shitty.
It's lying.
Just saying how much I like things that I hate. It's a cool thing.
Which is one of my favorite bits of yours, and it's fun to...
Maybe my only bit.
No one knows what is a bit and what isn't a bit anymore. As always, I'm at John Gabris. Guys, the regular episodes of High and Mighty come out on Thursdays. If you're not listening to those, please do. Check out Mondays for the rest of the Fanshee special episodes. I'm at John Gabris on Twitter. Get ready for some High and Mighty t-shirts that are about to drop and some other interesting High and Mighty news, which I don't actually have. But I thought I'm going to start saying stuff like that at the end of the podcast. I also probably shouldn't mention the part that I don't have any other news. Thanks for listening, shitheads. And thank you, Sean and Chris. Later.
Thanks, buddy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.